Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Newcastle have drawn 1-1 at Bournemouth. At Bournemouth, in Newcastle, we've drawn with Bournemouth. It was 1-1. It wasn't very good. It was not very good at all. And I've got Norman Reilly, Charlotte Robson, Simon Campbell with me today in our office in Newcastle to talk through what happened and why and where we go from here. I don't know who wants to start. I'm going to pose an open question to you all. And I think this is a fairly reasonable thing to say, but the worst under Howe for a long time. The worst home performance under Eddie Howe, is that a fair performance? So Eddie Howe certainly seemed to think of after the match. I've never heard him kind of go at the players like that before and talk about the lack of acceptability almost of the performance.
Yeah, I mean, you can probably discount a couple of Spurs performances in there, but yes, that is the worst in terms of expectation versus the result and the performance we got. That was probably the worst, not just from the players. I would say there was mistakes made by the manager. I think substitutes weren't made early enough. So it was a bad performance all around from the entire team and coaching staff. I would also say it's the worst performance from the crowd under Eddie Howe. That's the worst atmosphere I've seen at St. James's Park. Now, I understand why people were frustrated. The performance was poor and it was really, really difficult to watch towards the end when we just weren't doing anything to try and win the game. It at least didn't feel that way, and I understand why people were getting wound up. There was silly decisions being made, shots from distance when we still had plenty of time and stuff like that, and people were getting wound up, but the booze at the end is unacceptable. But I also don't think that 12th man effect that we've seen so many times under Eddie Howe was there at all. I think there was very little collective support for the players who I'm not going to suggest they weren't trying. I think there was still the endeavour, still the work rate was there. There was just very little creativity, and that was the problem yesterday. So I don't think it was due to lack of trying. So I don't think the players could be accused of or deserved the negative reaction necessarily. I just think everyone was very frustrated, and collectively the team, the club, the fans just had a really bad day yesterday.
I agree. I think it's interesting the point you make about the 12th man element of it, because we mentioned this earlier on in the season, perhaps during pre-season, that as a team now, there are lots of games that we're expected to win at home. This has been something that hasn't been on the player's shoulders for a long, long time, right? I mean, you could argue under Benitez in the Premier League, definitely under Bruce, pretty much every match we went into, I never felt confident of winning. I always thought we might win, but I wasn't ever thinking we're definitely going to win. Whereas under Howe, since the turn of the year, especially, more or less every home game, other than against, you know, Man City, for example, even Arsenal to a certain extent, like last season, you're thinking, well, we might get a win. We probably won't, but we might get a win. A game against Bournemouth, a game against Palace, you're thinking, no, we're going to win. And I think that, as a fan, you see this with a lot of clubs, right? When the expectation's higher, you do see this kind of drop-off in intensity of atmosphere from the fans, again, depending on the opposition. And I think probably with the 50,000 Newcastle fans going in that stadium yesterday, the vast majority expected a win, and I think that was kind of perhaps reflected. And obviously we didn't have Gallagher flags as well to kind of whip up a bit of a frenzy before the game, which it's interesting because it almost feels like that kind of outlines the importance of the work that Gallagher flags have done, right? Gallagher flags, bit of a Freudian slip there. But war flags, but I think the performance on the pitch was lethargic. Maybe that 2-week break just hasn't helped as well. Obviously, you know, the game against West Ham being called off in the way it did, as quickly as it did as well, because you would have thought all the prep that had been put into that, all the tactical setup, everything how had gone through, all of a sudden, bang, it just drops. And then it's a case of having to pick up again after not having the intensity of that West Ham game. So I think it was kind of reflected. It almost felt like the players were coming back off holiday, even though they weren't, you know what I mean? And look, one thing I will say is, I probably underestimated Bournemouth as a team. You look at them getting tanked 9-0 and you're thinking they're terrible. But guess what happened though? O'Neill's just organised them, and they've got players in there who are experienced in the Premier League, and they got a grip of that midfield yesterday, and they just didn't let go, and we couldn't work out how to break it down. And then you mentioned substitutes. When we do bring subs on, you know, we're missing the SM, so we're starting Ryan Fraser, right, for example. Now, if we're bringing Ryan Fraser on as a substitute with 20 minutes to go, something might happen. We're bringing on Jacob Murphy, and I said on the Match Day podcast, I called for Jacob Murphy to come on just because I thought his directness, his pace, even though he's not very good at crossing or shooting, he doesn't really get assists. At least he causes a bit. At least he causes a bit of chaos, right? But he came on and obviously was completely ineffective. That's not necessarily owning him because the team were pretty poor. But I mean, the lack of options from the bench yesterday, I thought really told. Yeah. And obviously, ASM is absolutely vital to this team in games like this.
I feel like I get what you're saying about Bournemouth. Like I think we maybe underestimated them. Yeah, they still aren't very good. Like we were watching them yesterday, and they still aren't very good. We should have been like several goals up by halftime. They didn't. Nick Pope had he might as well not have been there. Like if, so little did he have to do, and they're just not a good team. And that isn't a good result against a not a good team. Like. Those are the teams we need to be comfortably beating.
I see what you're saying, but at the same time, we under Benitez weren't a very good team, yet we suffocated a lot of sides, and that's how we got points. And I think Bournemouth yesterday worked out very quickly what our game plan was. O'Neill worked out very quickly what it was. The players on the pitch did it, and they just suffocated from playing. And I completely agree. They're a team that we should be thumping, really. I mean, that, if we want to finish, if we've got aspirations of the top eight, Bournemouth's a team that we should be comfortably beating like we did Nottingham Forest. But yesterday, I mean, as I say, I will give credit to them. They came organised, disciplined, and it was enough. It was enough. And I think that's the sad thing is that it was enough to stifle with, which obviously going forward, it's something we need to work out. When teams do come to St. James's and suffocate space, there needs to be a plan B. And I don't think we saw much of a plan B yesterday.
I think it's definitely 2 points dropped, like massively 2 points dropped. I think that's why I was so despondent this morning. But I agree with what you're saying, Norman. Bournemouth came with a plan, a very simple plan of get 10 men behind the ball and try and catch her on the break. And to be fair, they caught with the one real break. There was a couple of opportunities maybe early on, but there's only one real chance they've had. And it's a very well taken goal from Bournemouth, to be fair. You could say defensively really poor, letting Billing just wander off into space and score. But it was you know, they caught us off guard on the break. And other than that, their plan absolutely worked. Get 10 behind the ball. They know we're going to struggle to break them down without a player like Maximan on the team who can beat players and then create an opening. If it's 11v11 and we haven't got anyone who's going to beat a man, but mathematically that makes it really, really hard to get anywhere. You need a moment of brilliance and it didn't come. I think Bournemouth set up very, very well. They probably knew our weaknesses, knew who was missing, knew that would probably, if they just set up and made it really rigid, leave no gaps, we had no answer to that, and it was right. We didn't have an answer to it.
I think there's always going to be a desire, particularly from people like us who talk about what's happened for other people, to look at the specific incidents and the specific, you know, selections of the game yesterday, and then you maybe try and analyse them in isolation. And realistically, this is a season-long problem so far. Like yesterday, I think one of the reasons people are most disappointed about yesterday is probably it was quite predictable, despite some of us predicting big wins like I did. But I think realistically, everyone hopefully, because there's a little bit of discussion about this, know that without ASM, Newcastle United are a shadow of the side in an attacking sense, a shadow of the side. It was the same before the takeover. It was, you know, his importance to this team, and I would argue Jonjo Shelvey's as well, from a purely attacking sense, should not be in question now. They're two massive players to miss. And what a half fit Bruno yesterday. What did he last? Like 70 minutes, 65 minutes? So we're still without kind of four key players from an attacking sense. I'm, you know, giving myself an extra player in Bruno there. But realistically, in terms of how we play, and I think a lot of people have made this point. Mark Douglas made the point to me on Twitter earlier. It's the bench. When Bournemouth come to St. James's Park and play with 30% of the ball, just like when Palace come to St. James's Park and play with hardly any of the ball, good teams in this division turn the screw in the last 30. In the last 20, the last 30, when they have tired legs, we are able to therefore turn the screw. Defensive errors are made, they're put under pressure, the crowd gets on the back. We're the opposite. We're against Palace and against Bournemouth, it's the first halves that we act, and even a bit against Forest, it's the first half when we have all our chances. And the other team, when the avalanche of chances should come, when they're facing their own goal time and time again, when they're having to defend balls in between the goalkeeper and the penalty spot time and time again, we are unable to kind of execute that later stage of the game. And the answer to it really is lack of quality off the bench. I don't think Jacob Murphy gets a game for Bournemouth. Maybe Sean Longstaff's a difficult one because he's had good games for Newcastle, but certainly based on his performance yesterday, he comes on and doesn't affect the game whatsoever. Elliot Anderson might have made a difference if he had been fit, so that's a real shame. So we're kind of without five players in an attacking sense that you'd really expect the other to make other teams suffer. And then the other one is Eddie Howe's kind of, people are calling it inflexibility. In that moment, Newcastle don't particularly change formation. He doesn't give Chris Wood 20 minutes alongside Isak, who we'll talk about later in the show. He doesn't allow Ryan Fraser and Chris Wood to play together, because Fraser's probably the only player who can cross the ball for Newcastle, and Wood's the only player who wants the ball to be crossed relentlessly to his head. So they're kind of little hyper-criticisms, I think, but ultimately, I just don't think we're a good enough team or good enough squad to be able to dominate games like we want to do. And it is a transition to dominate. We even under Benitez, like you say, Norman, definitely not under Bruce, not under Benitez, not under McLaren, rarely under Pardew. How far back can I go here? Win your Castle aside, that would have 70% of the ball at home, regardless of the opposition. So it's new for everyone. Like Si says, it's new for the crowd as well. And it is frustrating. And you could maybe go back to the Championship, actually, and talk about it then. But, you know, we were doing this podcast in the Championship, and how often did we talk about how bad the crowd was and how frustrated St. James used to get playing against bad teams, not able to break them down. So it's new, and I think that should this situation happen again, if you look at the fixtures to come, well, first of all, we should have better players back. Callum Wilson was close to being on the bench yesterday. You'd assume in 2 weeks' time he'd be fit enough to start against Fulham and beyond. ASM, minor setback. Jonjo Shelvey, back earlier than predicted, should be back within a month. And then Elliot Anderson should be back as well. So will this happen again? I don't know, but we should have better players. I think the concern for me is it's particularly the two wide men. I think everyone, most Newcastle fans, knew that ASM has the left-hand side nailed, right? We're not going to get better than them. We don't want better than them. Some people don't like them, but the vast majority of people do. It's that right-hand side, which Eddie Howe was pretty vocal about, I think, to journalists in particular, that key position for him over the summer was that right-hand attacking position. We didn't strengthen, and I don't know whether he feels like this, and he picks Miguel Morón to play there, but I'm fucking sick of watching Miguel Morón be played with a very good ball into a very good position and to cut back on his left foot. The opposition know it's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. He knows it's going to happen. Screaming yesterday for him to just switch sides with Fraser. Just switch sides and see what happens. But that also seems to me, you know, is that a solution? Are all our problems from an attacking sense going to go away if Miguel Almirón plays on the other side of the pitch? Probably not.
You and I talked about it because I watched a match with Alex yesterday. And, you know, you can switch Almirón over to the other side and bring Fraser over. but... They're not threatening. There's no aggression in our front three with Isak and those two, and like, you know, Almirón, for all we talk about his big emoji smiling face, that doesn't frighten teams. That doesn't worry teams. And I know it's not just about his face and the way that he runs and stuff, but he's just there's a real lack of like. Of bite, I think, there. Fraser too, and Isak. Maybe Isak will come out a little bit more. Like when he scored at Liverpool, there was something there. There was something quite. I talked about it on the free pod after that. This kind of arrogance, this kind of aggression, that is in him. But he's not getting that. We will talk about it. He's not getting that service. But those two out wide, I just think you said it to me. The opposition is fine with them having the ball. It doesn't, like, they're not worried about that. They're worried if it's ASM. They're
worried if it's Trippier.
They're worried if it's Trippier.
Almirón gets the ball.
And it just, I don't know how you fix that. That feels almost personality, and I don't want to, you know, shit on them as people, but like it's not working.
So with Almirón, I think that it would have been good to have seen him go on to the left yesterday. Now look, would it have made a massive difference? Possibly not, but would it have made a slight difference? Maybe, and that slight difference might have been the little difference that we needed to get a second goal or to take the lead, right? And you have to look at the front three under Benitez, right? So Rondon, Perez and Almirón. Almirón played on the left-hand side then, right? And that front three more or less built up an understanding very quickly. They were lucky in the sense that I think they had like 8 or 9 games together where they were fully fit. They combined fantastically well. I don't think, you know, that front three is as effective, is as good as our, you know, full strength front three now. It isn't. But at the same time, what they had was they had time, they had a little bit of time to develop. They stayed fit. And there was an element of luck in there. And obviously, Miguel Almirón on that left-hand side, that front three, well, he was excellent. He was. I mean, look, I know our standards at the time were lower, so we're probably looking at him being better than what he actually is. But I do feel that at least if he's on that left-hand side of the pitch, he might whip in a couple of first-time crosses. That might actually happen, and that might make a bit of difference. But again, I think we have to look at it from like if I'm trying to look at the positives here, from a luck perspective, Wilson and Maxi being out means that the front three haven't had any time, these first choice front three, whatever that may be, hasn't had any time to gel. And I think the issue is that, you know, again, Fraser's kind of been sporadically in and out the side as well. And really you could argue that Ryan Fraser hasn't been in necessarily good form for 3 years. He's struggled with injuries. His last season at Bournemouth was a bit of a write-off. So I think there is an element of confidence there as well. But I agree, yesterday I did at one point think, just flip them round. And one other thing, maybe unrelated, but because I don't want to focus on any sort of, you know, come across as too negative, that Kieran Trippier free kick guns in yesterday, we're going to win that game. We're literally the width of the post away, probably winning the game. So it's just these little bits of bad luck tied into the fact that we are possibly a little bit tactically inflexible, or at least we were yesterday.
I do agree, and I think I said that to you straight after the game. Normally, like if we'd scored one of those chances that came in the flurry to just before half time, we probably do go on to win the game comfortably. That's probably fair. The fact that there were no further highlights is the problem that we should go back to. But I just want to defend Miggy and Ryan Fraser a little bit. Now, I agree with everything that you guys have said, and I think they were both very ineffective in their position overall yesterday. But they were so easy to defend against, and it is a little bit down to the one-footedness, especially of Miggy. They just show him down the line every single time, and then when he cuts back, they've already got the fullbacks on the winger, and I wouldn't say Ryan Fraser got away from his man a couple of times, but still had to cut back inside. And by that time, the fullback's back on you. There's two centre halves on Isak, and then they've got another two midfielders crowding out the box.
Well, I thought when defending crosses yesterday, they went with back five. Anytime particularly Trippier got the ball, yeah, one
definitely
of their two
at least one midfielder dropped
so
in.
And I was saying this to Charlotte during the game. I was kind of saying it out loud. I was like, we've got three in the box, we've got four in the box, because they have, if the other team have more men than you in the box, it's got to be the best cross in the history of crosses to actually find someone in that like 9 yard place where everyone's standing.
And so also someone who can win a header in the box as well. We didn't necessarily have that yesterday, did we? Because, you know,
that's true.
He's not a target man. Whereas
clearly not an aerial centre forward, because I don't think he won one header in the entire game. But the players that did, like Joe Linton, can't head the ball very well, so it was just going everywhere. So, I just want to talk about Joe Linton and Joe Willock. I thought Willock was decent. Of all the midfielders, he was the only one trying to do something, trying to make something happen, but it wasn't very effective, really. When Fraser or Miggy were getting the ball in those kind of high positions near the byline, they were so far behind. They were so isolated, and they really need that support. The best games we've had from Miggy is where Miggy, Bruno and Joe Linton have been playing quite close together, short passes, and Wilson plays in very well with that. And obviously we're going to have to play slightly differently with Isak to his strengths, try and find him balls in behind and get him one-on-one with the keeper is basically what we're trying to do with Isak, and that didn't happen yesterday because Bournemouth was so deep. But yeah, I just thought the support from Joe Linton in a game where you don't really need him, hanging back and just kicking people's asses. You need more from him. You need creativity. You need him to contribute going forward. Willock was a little bit better, but similarly, he was running around a lot, but there was no close link of play with either of those wingers. They were so isolated and therefore so easy to defend against. I don't want to be too critical of their individual performances.
We'll come on to that in a bit, because it was a point I wanted to make about how it's not like how Eddie Howe stood at the side of the pitch thinking, oh, well, nothing to be done. He knew how Bournemouth were going to set up. But I want to come back to that in part two of the show. Charlotte has an advert from our paymasters.
I do. You must all be so excited to learn that UEFA Champions League soccer is streaming on Paramount Plus. 9 months of heart-stopping, hold-your-breath exhilaration is underway with the biggest stars, top teams, and craziest fan bases in Europe. That's not true. We're pretty crazy. Watch every match from the group stage through the knockout rounds as Benzema and Real Madrid defend their title against Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, PSG, Barcelona, and more in soccer's biggest club competition. That's football for everybody. So don't miss a single sweat-soaked second. God, that is rank, isn't it? That's such a horrible way of saying it. Of regulation time, stoppage time, and extra time. And stream every match of the UEFA Champions League live exclusively on Paramount Plus. I'm
all over that because I'm a big fan of Victoria Pilsen and the crazy fan base.
All right, we'll move on to part two of the show. I mean, first, my first question before we talk tactically a little bit is just to get your thoughts on the start to the season. You know, good start, bad start, worried, confident. Someone give me an answer. How are you feeling?
I feel, I feel, you know what, right, you have to put this into context. We've only lost one. We've drawn the rest of them, or won. And that's okay. Like, it took us till December to win a game last season. And it's really difficult. And I was trying to articulate this on the way in when I was chatting to Alex. It's really difficult because we ended last season so well and we won so many games. And I was trying to think, do we need the pressure to be on? Is that the only circumstance under which we really, you know, bring out the best performances and perform? But Alex rightly made the point that maybe not, because we were already safe and we still churned out really good performances and good results towards the end of last season. But it's still, you know, it's that sort of evolution, not revolution kind of thing that people keep saying. It's disappointing because you just want us to be class, and we have been class, and there's so much there and you can see it that we want to like eke out of our team. But at the same time, we've only lost one. This is still pretty, people are saying this is relegation form. It's not relegation form.
People are saying.
Yeah. People on your socials.
Not real people.
Somebody commented on the YouTube bots. Video that we did saying that is relegation form. It's not relegation form. Like, honestly, calm down. Maybe it's not European form. Okay. And that is what we want, of course. But we just need to be a little bit more calm about this. I don't think it's a bad start.
I agree. I don't think it's a bad start. And obviously, whatever, you know, Bulldog Bill Blake 072543 thinks about it being relegation form. You're incorrect, mate. But look, we're 10th in the table, right? We've lost once. We're 3 points off sixth place, Fulham, same amount of games. So has it been a bad start compared to last season? Most certainly not. It hasn't been a bad start, right?
I was just going to say, a lot of people are coming at me on social media saying, stop talking about last season. Like, how long can we talk about last season? Well, the wounds are still real.
But last season was a bad start, though.
You used to spend a lot of time and money watching a really shit football team kind of not really try very hard to win games. I think that the fact that Jacob Murphy, the fact we're talking Sean Longstaff, Jacob Murphy and Fabian Schär, these guys are still a link to 8 games ago, which is last season. And I do think it's relevant about where we've come from and where we're going, you know. Me and Charlotte did a quick video for another company, and we were kind of asked about, you know, how long it'll take to win the league, how long will it take Newcastle to win the Champions League, and then doing the research, like, it took Man City a long time. Mm-hmm. Man City, as people have made the point, came from a much higher base than Newcastle were coming from. These guys who own the football club now, they bought a shell of a football club. There was no staff. There was no, everyone hated each other in terms of fans, players, fans, journalists. Eddie Howe takes over a football club that pretty much everyone outside of the region is just like, they're going down. Even though Steve Bruce was doing a great job, they're still going down. How does that work? I don't know. Ask West Brom fans. So last season is relevant. And like you're correctly saying, where we're coming from is relevant. I think we should be doing better. But fucking hell, like you say, we've lost once in the opening 7 games. In that time, we've played Wolves away, we've played Liverpool, we've played Manchester City. There's 3 defeats for you. You know, previously, we've lost one. And if it wasn't for VAR and it wasn't for the post in the last 2 fixtures, we could be sat here saying we're in fourth place.
I think the disappointment's been, right, is that obviously, again, I'm a reference to last season, the form towards the end last season was superb, right? But also, I think it's the home games it's Bournemouth and Crystal Palace. It's failing to win either one of those games. That's probably what's made this feel a lot worse than what it actually is, because they're the kind of games when the fixtures are announced at the start of the season, you're looking at those first 10 games, and you're picking the ones that you're going to get 3 points in. Palace and Bournemouth, you're going to probably have them nailed doing as 3 points, or at least getting 4 points from those 2 games. That's what makes it disappointing. If they'd been away games, if Palace and Bournemouth had been away, this wouldn't feel as bad. You'd be like, oh, there's another away game that we haven't lost, Reed. So it hasn't been a bad start. It hasn't been a good start. It's been a hell of a lot better than last season, right? The important thing new is the next 3 games. Fulham away is going to be a tough game. I think we can win, but it's going to be a tough game. They're in good form. They've got some decent players. They're going to be fired up. They've got an ex-player who probably feels he still has a point to prove against Newcastle. The games after that, Brentford and Man United, tough games. Brentford at home is not an easy game, as we know. And Man U away at Man U have seemed to have turned a corner a bit. We come with those three games, I would say, with anything less than 4 points. So that'll be what? Let's say it's 3 points, right? We that means 11 points from 11 games. 11 points from 10 games. We'll probably start thinking at that point, oh, this hasn't been great. If there's no wins in those three games, that's when we'll start thinking this has been a pretty bad start of the season. But right now, as it stands, you know, I'm not going to get too wound up with this. We're in 10th. We're 3 points off 6. You know, that's our league.
Relegation form, Norman.
Well, just to defend Billy Boy 76514, 5 points from the last 6 is relegation form. That's on course for finishing on like 33 points.
No, you can't just exclude.
I know. I'm being slightly facetious. So yes, I'm a little bit more worried than you lot are, because of the fixtures you've just mentioned, Norman. Because I think they are difficult fixtures. I think it's gonna be very hard to go to Fulham, who are in, you know, they've had a bit of a bounce. And where
can I put a question to you?
Go on.
Would you not then buy into possibly what Charlotte was saying, that the more difficult the fixture and the more riding, the better we become? Not just because of the fact that we need the points, but also we're going to be, like, Miguel Almiron and Ryan Fraser, if they're playing, are going to be afforded what they weren't afforded against Palace and Bournemouth, which is spacing behind. And throw Isak into that as well.
Possibly, yes. And I think one observation I'd make on Mickey, just to go down that point for a second, is that he doesn't like time on the ball. If he's just got no time to think, and I would probably say the same for Fraser, if we're playing on instinct, we seem to be much better than when we've got loads of time and loads of touches. So maybe that's right. And I also agree that we'll get much better performances at Spurs away and Man U away in the next few weeks than we ever have before. So there is that to factor in, and I totally buy into the fact that this is a work in progress and you can't expect us to be mint overnight. I think we are all still affected by how good it was last season. We're all still affected by the fact we've got Botman, we've got Bruno, and we're worried about what happens if we don't kick on this season, if we end up finishing somewhere lower than expected. On paper, we should be in the top 10, and we are still in the top 10 technically as of today. If Leeds win this weekend, or their game's been cancelled, isn't it? If you know, next week we don't win at Fulham, then we're down to like 12th, 13th. It just starts to get a bit worrying, those fixtures. You get up to Christmas and you're not really looking like kicking on into that top 8. And yes, we've had injuries. Yes, we've had some VAR nightmares this season. It's, I don't know. I'm just a little bit more worried now and a little bit concerned that I haven't seen any really blowing away performances. The performances have been good and have deserved probably more points than we've got. But at the same time, we've had Wolves where we didn't really create a chance until Maxi scores a worldie at the end of the game. Brighton probably didn't deserve anything from that game. We're really poor. Palace were scored, but also it was like yesterday, very little creativity. Yesterday, that game could have easily finished 0-0. They got a lucky break and we got a pen through VAR, but it could easily been 0-0 another day.
The comeback to that, though, and I'm not even saying disagree with you loads, the comeback, and what I don't want to do, I don't want to fall into the trap of like of reducing the game to its highlights, which some people do. So you could look at the highlights and say, against Palace, well, we hit the post, we had a goal disallowed, Guaita pulls off 3 very, very good saves. Yesterday, Joe Linton hits the post, the inside of the post, Kieran Trippier hits the post, and then if you look at the highlights of the games, I think Pope makes 1 save against Palace. You think Newcastle should win that game 3-1, but when you watch the games in the entirety, you're like, I thought Newcastle should have beaten Palace. But yesterday, you can't begrudge Bournemouth a point, despite their lack of endeavour. I don't want to turn into that fan base where the team with much less resources comes, like we do to Liverpool, and Liverpool fans are incredulous that we'll have we're trying to run down the clock, or
gamesmanship.
Gamesmanship. We might try and be happy with a point. That's fine. That's a really good point for Bournemouth. But it like you say, Si, it is a worry that the Palace highlights and the Bournemouth highlights cover about 40 seconds of play across the two fixtures, and then there's the other 180 minutes. That's the real concern.
I've got a question for you. So I guess we could say the start of the season's been disappointing in terms of points, right? But there have been positives. We know that. How do you think Howe's seen the start of the season?
Well, that's a good question.
I think I was going to say, Si made a point there about the performances. Man City at home, I suppose, is the template. Mm-hmm. Because everyone's fit. Everyone. And it was very, very, very good. Newcastle could have won that game. Man City could have won that game. Man City don't look like conceding a goal. You know, competitive. Look at what Man City have gone and done to Wolves yesterday. So I think Howe will be frustrated at yesterday. And one of the reasons, I was going to go into this later on, so I'm going to now. I think one of the reasons he's frustrated yesterday is that there was a plan. There was a plan for Miguel Almiron cutting back. There was a plan for Ryan Fraser being you know, not being able to get past two players. There was a plan, and the plan right from the start was to push those two wide men much further up the pitch, so almost in possession. We weren't just pushing everything wide, because Bournemouth, as we saw, happy all day defending crosses. We got a penalty from the cross, but they were happy defending crosses. And the idea was that those two players would be a genuine front three, not two wide men, a genuine front three. So what you saw was Joe Linton and Joe Willock almost playing very, very wide when we were in possession for parts of the game anyway. I said to Charlotte right at the start of the game, I was like, fucking hell, Joe Linton's pretty much playing here as a left winger when we're in possession. Didn't work though. And that's the frustrating thing for how I think is that there was a plan for that and it still didn't work. I actually thought picking Dan Byrne, who had a fine game, nothing wrong, but I thought it was a strange one because I've been so impressed by Botman. He's such a goal threat, Botman, from set pieces. And also he's so comfortable on the ball. But Byrne's comfortable on the ball, but nowhere near to the level Botman is. But I think how yesterday what he's annoyed about is we fell into Bournemouth's trap. The reason Bournemouth were going to a back five whenever we had the ball wide is because they expected crosses and there wasn't enough, like Si says, there wasn't enough patient build-up play. Charlotte said to me second half yesterday when Joe Willock and Fabian Scher and I think Sean Longstaff are having shots from 35 yards, you'd give Scher it because he'd done it before. But that's like, that was a team panicking.
Yeah.
And I think they'd planned for Bournemouth to be very, very, to get lots of men in defensive positions in the penalty area. And there was supposed to be a plan, yet the players reverted to just trying to shoot from distance, cross the ball. And I think that's where his frustration will have come from.
I think what yesterday exposed, I mean, Bournemouth have taken some hammerings from Liverpool and Man City. The gulf in quality that we have compared to those teams, because they would have set up in a very similar way to try and shut down those games and just had no success. Where we made it easy for them, I thought the likes of Fabian Scher, I agree, that shot was maybe like the 89th minute. At that point, fair enough, Fabian, just have a go. But his distribution from the back was really poor. I was saying after about 50 minutes, let's just get Botman on at the back. Don't need Dan Byrne. He's, like you say, he wasn't having a bad game, but someone who can move the ball a bit quicker, a bit more accurately, because where we let ourselves down was whenever there was a gap, whenever Trippier did have 10 yards of space, the pass to him was poor. It was behind him, or it was getting intercepted, or it was just a little bit too far ahead of him and difficult to control. I thought the moving from side to side was, as frustrating as it was, the reason it wasn't working is the passing was really inaccurate. It was really, the quality just wasn't there. Joe Willock's passing was poor. It wasn't reaching the men. Joe Linton was giving the ball away loads. I just think that to play that game and to try and break down a team like Bournemouth when they were doing what they were doing requires precision passing, it requires quality, it requires quick thinking, and all of that was missing yesterday, and you need all of your players playing well. So the likes of Fabian Scher had an off game with the ball. I thought he was making a lot of mistakes, giving it away. I thought Trippier was fine. I thought Mike Target had one of his worst games for Newcastle. Just, again, don't think it was bad. I just think he was giving the ball away. His passing was poor. There was no connection between him and Fraser. They obviously haven't played together much, which is exactly what you said before, Norman. There's that kind of, those link-ups aren't there yet and those relationships aren't there because we're playing different players every week. So maybe that is impacting how we play. But I just thought, quality-wise across the park, whilst the lads were trying, things just weren't coming off, and I don't know what you put that down to, but it was just kind of a reminder that we are nowhere near the force that we think we are just yet in terms of how good our individual players are.
Spot on, mate. I think the Botman situation's interesting. You mentioned his goal threat, and we had 8 corners yesterday. Bournemouth had 1, and I can't recall those corners coming to anything in terms of being a threat. The all seemed to be dealt with pretty easily, and I think in the first half there was actually an attempt at a training ground manoeuvre, short corner. Joe Linton plays the ball out, doesn't even have a short corner, and then there's nothing coming to it. I'm trying to think back of the chances that we had, you know, the Joe Linton inside, the post, obviously the free kick from Trippier is not from a corner, but those corners didn't come to anything, did they? So I think Botman on the pitch yesterday may well have, you know, he may have made a difference. At least he would have been a threat. We didn't seem to offer any threat from those set pieces whatsoever.
The only thing I can think of is that Solanke and Billings are so tall, so much taller than everyone but Byrne. That's why he's gone with that. But again, these are, Newcastle haven't only won one game this season because Dan Byrne starts ahead of Sven Botman in the fixture against Bournemouth. These are almost kind of like, you know, we're looking for answers where maybe there are none. Maybe the solutions are much bigger. But Si, you made the point there that the difference in quality between Man City and Liverpool when they play teams like Bournemouth, we go to Liverpool with fucking half a team, like should win the game probably. Yeah. And then we'll play Man City at home and get fucked over by the referee, should win the game probably. So that, I think that's where a lot of fans are struggling. It's like, how can we be so good in these fixtures and so poor in these other ones.
I think that's a mentality thing, that, and that's Eddie Howe's problem to solve. Games even against Bournemouth, well, not Bournemouth last season, but even teams against the teams in the bottom five last season were relegation six-pointers. Every game had everything riding on it. The crowd was up for it. The players were up for it. It was do or die. There was no do or die yesterday, and that's why the crowd was getting frustrated, because we're expecting to win the game. The players probably had a little bit of complacency there, expecting, oh, we'll beat these. We're good enough to beat these. There was no kind of, we absolutely have to win this game, which every single fixture between January and May last year was like that. Every single, you just got 110%. The lads ran themselves into the ground. Didn't feel like that was the case yesterday. And I think that's a mentality thing that Eddie Howe is now going to have to work on with the players and say, like, well, how do I get you lads back up for these fixtures? Because we're just giving points away at the minute because we're not putting everything into these games.
Fair enough. And I want to talk before we finish the show today about Alexander Isak. Sai's just did a big thumbs down, which is funny. But Charlotte, I'll let you say what you want to say about how you analysed his performance yesterday.
I just think that, like, there's a little bit of talk about how he's not good enough. Like, we were talking about, don't worry, Norman, I'm with you. Norman's shaking his head.
Build up Sai's response here.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of talk about how he's not good enough. He's not going for the ball. He's not doing X, Y, and Z. That's not his game. And, like, Isak got no service yesterday. Like, he was in the box, like, most of the times that he had to be there, and the ball wasn't finding its way to him. Like, I think he can score. I think he will score. But he is, you know, I was looking at how he's played elsewhere, and he's always had someone with him. He's played as part of a two or a 1-1, and he's so isolated yesterday, he just couldn't get the ball.
I think that's part of why Eddie Howe wanted to get Almiron and
Fraser
in the box with them close and in possession, but
it just didn't work.
I mean, it's a good point, like Norman says, like raised earlier. When did Almiron and Fraser pass to Isak? It's like they're playing on different teams.
Spot on. I think he's an excellent player. He's a quality player, and he's going to be a quality player. Look at that performance against Liverpool. What did we see? The ball into his feet, right? You know, we were counter-attacking in that game, but the ball came into his feet. Those two goals that he scored were outrageous, right? That second goal, which was a goal, no two ways about it, was outstanding. He, against Palace, has one real clear-cut chance. It's him robbing the defender, so it's the ball on the floor. He's allowed to run directly towards the goal. Unlucky. And yesterday, he is absolutely starved of service. He's not connecting well with the two wide players. You know, Bournemouth managed it. Sensini and who's the other centre-half? Mepham. I thought they did a very good job. They did a very good job on him. He still scored. He's still got 2 and 3. You could argue he's got 3 and 3 because, as I say, that ridiculous goal against Liverpool being disallowed. So it's not a bad start for a kid who was more or less out of form last season. He's arrived with a massive transfer fee. He's a young kid with a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and he's still got 2 and 3, and he's adapting to a new league. I think he's an excellent player, and it's just a case of Newcastle learning how to play with him. Has he been brought in to challenge Callum Wilson, to replace Callum Wilson, to play alongside Callum Wilson? Who knows? But one thing I do know is he's a different kind of player to Callum Wilson. So that means that when he is number 9, when he's up top in that central role, there has to be maybe a slight change in how we play. Launching balls in the box, crosses, even fast-paced crosses whipped across the box. Maybe not his game. It's ball into feet. It's ball into feet off a ball for him to run onto. So it's just a question of adapting to him. But he's a quality player, and he will turn out to be superb at Newcastle. So Simon, I don't even want to listen to this. I don't even want to listen yet.
I'm just going to add very quickly that there was a moment yesterday where, you know, it's exactly what you're saying, Norman. He did get the ball at his feet. He's basically like walking with it. Like it was so graceful, like his command of the ball. And he was just like sliding past other players with it very, very, very comfortably. We just need more of that. He just needs to get the ball. Like that's all. And he just wasn't getting it yesterday.
Good points, lads. I don't think he's a bad football player. I thought his performance yesterday was a bit
shite. Indeed.
I thought his performance yesterday was a bit shite. I think you're right to pick up on the Liverpool performance, which is a very different situation in terms of Liverpool don't play a physical game. And I think Isak, or as physical as some of these other teams, I thought Mepham and whatever the other centre-half's called, Argentinian. Mm-hmm. They bullied him yesterday, and I don't think he was enjoying the physicality at all, almost to the point where he was drifting out of the game. He was making some intelligent runs, but he was also, whenever Fraser Almiron had the ball, he seemed to be behind like three defenders. He just wasn't available. There was no way they were ever going to find him. Same with Joe Linton. And I know we're used to a very different very different setup with Callum Wilson, because he's so clever and so good at making those runs, and he understands this league. He understands how to make space against Premier League defenders, whereas Isak, 100%, he's going to need time to work that out. He's also going to need time to bulk up, because he's a tall, skinny lad at the moment, and he was getting bashed around. To sum up, there was a point in the first half where he gets a clunk on the head, and then we've got the ball in a very dangerous position, and he goes down holding his head, so the ref has to stop the game. And it's like, no, man, Alexander, just don't be hurt, because he's fine. But obviously, if he's got a head injury, he should go down. But game had a bloody stop, didn't it? And it's just like, oh, come on, man. I don't know. I just thought he was really poor. I thought he looked like, and this is probably really harsh, he looked like he was actively trying not to get involved in the game. He was avoiding conflict. He was avoiding situations. He didn't look interested. And this sounds harsh, but
so harsh.
Watching from where we were, you know, I was quite close to the pitch from my seat yesterday, and he just looked a little bit like he wasn't enjoying himself, and he was really kind of reluctant to stick his head in or stick his foot in. I presume he's got some learning to do about the Premier League, about how physical it is, how you're not going to get the time and space that he somehow did against Liverpool. We managed to put him in twice, one on one, and my God, he can run with the ball. He's got very good control. You're right, Charlotte. And the two finishes against Liverpool were sensational, and I can't wait to see more of that. But in a nitty gritty battle where there's five or six players in the box with you, I don't think that's where we're going to see his best stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't pick up on a lot of those things yesterday. I was quite impressed with how he played on scraps, and some of his touches, some of his link-up play was very, very good. It wasn't going to our players. That's because our players were fucking miles away. It was almost like, you know, doing a little flick with the inside of his foot, turn around, and it's like, well, where's Miguel? Where's Ryan? Like they're in our half of the pitch for some reason. I just think it is a shame, because we had 2 weeks to prepare for yesterday. And like I've already alluded to, there were some things that would have possibly been worked on in the meantime and didn't come off yesterday. I think one of the most disappointing things is that was still, after 2 weeks, still didn't manage to create Alexander Isak a clear-cut chance. Yeah. I don't blame him for that. That's very disappointing that we as a team didn't manage to do that. Class pen. I'm a huge fan of that penalty. I really enjoy well-taken pens. Axis keeper's not going to save. Callum Wilson needs to give... I don't think he will, but if they're on the pitch at the same time, he needs to give Isak the ball, because Wilson's pens make me very nervous indeed.
Has he missed one, though?
I think he might have missed one.
Oh, really? Did he get the rebound from it?
I don't know.
Does it count as a missed pen when it's a rebound?
he puts them kind of in the middle of the goal, close to the keeper, and the keeper has to go the wrong way. Isak sent the keeper the wrong way and managed to get like the side of the net, which is beautiful. You can't save them.
It was a perfect penalty, mate.
It was lovely.
I was just going to say, in terms of Isak bulking up, is there an argument that he just needs to reach out to Hatton Benhoff or Paddy Cliver to see where the best place is in Newcastle are to put on a little bit of weight in a short amount of time?
Formerly John Joe Shelby, but not anymore. Mm.
Beautiful now, John Joe.
Yeah. We need you, John.
Ridge like a tumbleback.
I think we'll leave it there. We've covered most aspects of the game today. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you like what we do, we're on Patreon. It's £8 a month and 2 weeks to come of podcasts on Newcastle United before the next fixture at Fulham, which Norman will be at for True Faith. And you get all the match day content as well from hopefully a victory in London. So thanks to yous three. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back with you talking about Newcastle United very soon. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.